I have a partner that we check in all the time and we're super supportive. When I say to my wife, or she says to me, that this is something I want to do, and you show in your daily habits that it's something you want to do, then there's really no argument.
All right, who do we have here today? Name, please.
Hey, how's it going? My name is Armando Rivera.
And what's your occupation, sir?
I'm a stand-up comedian, but right now in COVID, I am stay-at-home writer.
So does COVID mean you're no longer a stand-up comedian?
No, it doesn't mean that, but
Exactly.
that's a good point.
Okay, where is the most obvious social if people want to follow you after the show?
Right now, my most active social is Instagram, Armando Rivera Comedy. I'm also on LinkedIn under the same name and stuff like that, but Instagram's the best one.
Okay, great. Let's go right into a big failure or mistake. Like one big, just huge thing in your life. I sent you these ahead of time. So did you have a chance to think about what that one thing might be?
Yeah, no, it was pretty recent, probably like a year ago. It was stopping doing what I loved as far as creating comedy.
So what do you mean? What happened with that? So this is a one big failure or mistake or like a struggle?
Yeah, I would think it was a big mistake and a failure. I got into a new relationship and I created the excuse for myself that because I was now with a new person and we had to grow together, right? That now the things that I love to do had to take a back burner when it's the opposite. I mean, I took a lot of time away to not do the things that I loved because I was getting to a point in my comedic career where it was getting really hard. So it was almost like that way that your brain rationalizes to trick you to do something else
Path of least resistance.
completely. And you're like, oh no, it's still important to me. I just got to do this other thing because
Yep.
that's important too. Yeah. That's kind of
Yeah.
where I ended up. It was a huge mistake. And when I was open with my partner about that, she was completely like, what? Like, why would you do that? You know, like like you should always pay attention to yourself as well. So I think that was a huge mistake, was kind of making that, you know, falling into what my brain wanted to do rather than kind of fighting against it.
All right, so a few questions. Let's unpack this quick. So, question one is going to be, it got hard. How? Give me an example. So, paint a picture also of what you were doing before. So, you were doing comedy, like just X times a week. You know, you were doing this, and then the hard part showed up, and then you kind of did it less. Like, what did that look like before when it was, in your words, easy? And then what did it look like when it started getting hard?
So I think in the beginning it was easy, especially when you go into something as a, you know,
Beginner.
as yeah, as a beginner, you don't have the predispositional shit, right?
Yep.
So I went in, I was excited, I made sure to write everything down that came to mind, anything that seemed like a premise, and then I got tied up into after a few months, I mean, I was going every day, dude. I was The earliest shows you could go to in LA were like around 3 and you 3 p.m.
Like
So
open mic, or how does that work?
I started off with open mics in the daytime, and then you'd try to call people up and book shows at night
Yeah.
times. So you'd call up local clubs, and hopefully by then you've built a network. So you go, hey man, I'm free from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. What
Yep.
spots do you guys have available? So I would call ahead. I'd be going out working material from 3 p.m. to about 7:30, and I'd call a friend just as the clubs were opening up and be like, hey, what's going on? And I would be doing that from, so basically the grind was from 3 p.m. to about 4 a.m. Yeah, it
Like
was.
how many shows? Like give me, so what does that look like? You do a show, you hang out, you wait, you get off the stage, you hang out, you go to another place. Like, is it like 8 shows in a day? I mean, what is like average?
So typically, if you're in LA, if you're doing good, it's a 3 show a night, and that's
How long is
solid.
a set?
A set can be anywhere at my level at the time, it was between 5 and 10 minutes.
Yep.
This was kind of after the beginner stage. I was getting into that, what they call a feature, which you can go as long as 15 minutes, and you typically go on Sometimes there's three or four features, and sometimes there's one feature that does half hour and they go straight to a headliner who does the full hour, 2 hours, whatever.
Right.
And then you got to account for drop-ins and stuff like that. Like if Dave Chappelle shows up, you're like, oh, well, I'm not getting any fucking time. Right. So there's a lot of politics involved with that. But yeah, typical nights like three shows a night, and you're working all your material out before. You've been out the night before till about 4 a.m. And it's a really long, arduous process. But like you said, you get to hang out with people and kind of shoot the shit in between shows or like just before you go on set. And you kind of, it's really just like a big hangout. Then you go on stage and you talk. But I think to your question, where it got hard was I got into it's funny because I heard something today where the environment in which you do your art can either make or break your art sometimes. Now, it is dependent on the singular person, right? Like I always knew that I was getting into something hard, and that most people, I mean, you know, you're a business owner and an entrepreneur, you understand that most people quit or they just don't do it. And I knew that I was doing the same thing with what I was doing with comedy, but I knew personally that I would do everything it took to make it work, right? Now, it's something about the environment in comedy. It's one of those like misery loves company type situations where you have a lot of drug addicts, you have a lot of people with just shit habits in general, you know, but drugs is definitely at the forefront in comedy. So you're dodging that stuff at shows all the time if you're not that type of person, right? I think where I got hard was I started to play to those people.
How?
Instead of going, it's important what the customer or the audience or what have you, whatever word you want to use, worrying about what they wanted and giving them an authentic me and giving them a good show and a good experience. Comics fall into this thing, especially in like the comedy underground, where you play to the comics. They call that playing to the back of the room. The
When
comic.
journalists try to write articles to impress other journalists so they can get
Yeah,
awards.
totally.
Yep.
Totally. It's all a marketing thing. And it sucks because I'm sure there have been plenty of, like you said, journalists, creatives in my field as comedians who were playing to comedians where some of the jokes, you know, they go over the crowd's head because you're like, you're doing an inside joke that you told with a comedian before. And some guys just chalk it up to, oh, I'm just intelligent. It's my brand of comedy's intelligence.
But so where's the hard part? Is the hard part was the audience becoming less responsive, and so you were
Yeah,
hitting like a
100%.
wall?
100%. It felt like I was doing the same jokes, and which you always have to do. You have to work your same set, right? But I was doing the same jokes and they weren't hitting the same. I was doing them a different way. In all instances, I changed my energy, you know, I changed a lot of things where essentially it was like changing myself. And I started to chalk that up to just, oh, it's just getting hard. This is, you know, this is the wall that every comedian hits, and you know, the crowd just doesn't get it, when it was really like, oh, I'm letting the environment that I'm in kind of poison my art with all these people who, with a good amount of people who probably shouldn't even be here, you know?
So how did that go from you're doing comedy, you're enjoying it, then it's getting hard, and you were like grinding? Are you like grinding less every week? Are you like showing up one less day? Are you showing up like half the time? And then a relationship happens and you're like, I'm gonna not go at all.
Yeah,
What happened? What kind of timeline
basically.
was that?
Yeah, that's almost exactly it. A year into it, I'm doing it every single day. I'm going to 15 or 20 mics a week. I'm doing, yeah. And I'm doing, and you're waiting hours at these mics. So it's a
Right, so it's a lot of
grind.
sitting around, right?
100%. Sometimes you're spending money. You got to buy a drink. And I'm not a drinker. So I'm like, all right, water, water, water. I got to piss in between all these, you know? I don't know if that's okay for your viewers or whatever, but
What, the word piss?
yeah.
Well, you already said, I think, shit. So I think we've already ruined it. So I'm gonna have to create a new podcast just for you.
I mean, you say you're gonna have
We're
different
adults
guests.
here.
Yeah, go.
We're not offended by words. No silly
Okay, good.
Nancy's up in here.
Good, good. I'm the same way. Good. No Nancy's. Perfect.
No.
That's offensive to Nancy's, Colin. Are you kidding me? Come
It's not spelled NANCY. It's NANCIES. And I don't,
Okay,
so
cool.
there you go.
So yeah, man, I was doing a lot of shows, just chalk it up to a lot. And then it went from maybe I'll go to one less one, or maybe I'll call out of one show because I didn't want to go. I had a rough mic run, right? And then I meet she's my now wife. So, I mean, I made the right call. It's just I didn't do the right small details, right? So, yeah, eventually it became meeting someone I liked, and then I stopped.
You just stopped. Like one day you're just like zero shows.
It it never happened. And
did she ask you or like
100%? And you
made up some BS.
Basically, and she would be like, "Hey," because when we met, she was in pre-law, so she was working just as much as I was.
Yeah,
and our nights were. It's funny because we were that couple that hung out late night, and not like typically people. Most people do, you know, they're like late night booty call. No, it was like, "Hey, you want to go hang out?" You know, at this late night spot and
yeah,
and
coffee shop talk. And study till 2 a.m. or whatever.
Basically, yeah, it's like big city coffee shop where it's open 24/7, and we would study there. We get a coffee, we talk. Yeah, so it just became. She started to ask because I started to become more available, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and every partner would love that, right? But if it, what I did, I made myself available by foregoing what it is I love to do, and those questions came up. It was like, "Hey, well, do you have a show this week or anything?"
Yeah.
Like,
well, were you aware when you would answer these questions, are you like lying to yourself and her at the same time? Or you're like kind of aware and you're just like telling yourself some story, like, "Well, yeah, I'll just do it later." I mean, like what was the mental thought process?
It was absolutely one of those things, like how people can get themselves to do anything. You go, I'm all right. I'm not, it hasn't been that long. I have plenty of material. I was hustling just like I could jump right back into that hustle like I was before.
Yep.
No problem. I could start tomorrow. And then a week turns into 2 weeks. And in comedy, 2 weeks is like, you gotta jump in, you know, because because it changes every night, you know, with the crowd and how you react to everyone. And
it's
how
also,
react to you.
Yeah. It's so also craft.
A month and,
it's also a craft that, like, for example, I think it's Chris Rock. He still does tons of small shows where he'll just go up there and not give a fuck. And he'll have like no cards of jokes. And he's like just testing shit that's not even funny. And he's that's going.
Yep. I've literally seen
him. And he's been doing it for years. Like, imagine years, that, like a craft years, where you do it forever. It's forever. Like never ending.
Forever.
Yeah.
George Carlin had a heart attack, not while filming, but during the same week he was filming an HBO special. So yeah, he literally died
doing
his craft. And I, that's what I love about stand-up is even Richard Pryor had, I believe it was MS or he had a horrible debilitating disease because of his drug use and his alcohol abuse. And I believe genetics as well.
Yep.
And he, you know, people, they were carrying him onto stage in his last days and he was still ripping the crowd apart.
Yeah.
So it's 100% that it's to think that I can go, I could stop and jump right back in, you know, and also I was in no place in my career to be doing, it wasn't like a Dave Chappelle.
Right.
Where I'm like,
right,
all right, I'm gonna go to Africa for, you know, 10 years and come back and just kill it, you know?
Okay. So then what is the transformation process? Cause that's what we're most interested in. Where you go from that, you maybe start realizing it. Maybe you start thinking about it here and there. Then you're like, do you formulate a plan? You're like, well, I'm gonna start 2 days a week, or I'm just gonna jump back in. You know, did you have to do any major interventions? And like, I mean, I don't even know where you're at this point. Have you failed? Or are you like kind of somewhere in between this process? Cause I'm just, I don't know if you're even doing it. Right. So where are you at now? And like, what part of that process and that thought process, and what are you doing or have had to do to try to like learn from this thing and get back in it?
Totally. That's perfect. Cause that's like right where I'm at, where I went through the whole, when I started back up, it was very much I tried to jump back into my previous hustle, and it just, you know, like anything, it's like, it's hard for people to do, especially with life going on. So I promised myself I would do one show a week, a show, not a mic. Didn't matter how many mics I did.
Yep.
I wanted to get up in front of an actual crowd and not just, you know, some other guys like me who like were having trouble in life, and just get in front of a group of people who are ready to have a good time and give them the best time I possibly could. And I was able to do that. Shooting for one show a week got me one show every other week. because of how long it had been since I'd been on the scene. And then after I got one show every other week, I would meet people at other shows. And then I started booking my week up. It slowly escalated. It went from one show every other week to three shows every week to my, a couple months later, I'm booked up. I'm booked up 2 months out, right?
Okay.
And, you know, I got to a place where I got to play. I was getting passed at like big clubs again. So like the last show I did was this place called the Ice House in Pasadena. And it's a super, super popular club. A lot of people play there. It's a legendary place. There's a lot of like mafia folklore. It's super cool. And, you know, I had gotten back to the point of what's fitting my craft into my daily activity in any possible way I could. So I got to a point where I was writing a joke a day. Every morning I wrote the premise to a joke a day, and I tried
to get
that
from Seinfeld.
I did Seinfeld. Yep. And
Don't Break the Chain.
And the guy that I used to, the guy that used to host Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Oh, Drew Carey.
Drew Carey. Got from Drew Carey too. That was from a book I read a couple of years ago.
So let me get this straight real quick before we go too far. So you started with, okay, the daily minimum routine. So you actually did, I don't, either on accident or on purpose, what all habit research says is you need to do the bare minimum every day and then build up rather than trying to set, oh, I'm gonna work out eight times this week or whatever. Like it's crazy ideas that the human mind, we love to do, right? It's the opposite of how you do it. So you started from the minimum, one a day, one joke a day, one line a day, whatever. And then one show a week.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you're doing that. Is that, did you fail at any point? Did you like have weeks where you like regressed, and where are you at now with it?
I think there were, in the beginning, there were points where I just didn't want to go out, but one show a week was typically, I think I set exactly what you said. I set the bare minimum low enough where like, if I wasn't doing that, then it was like, do I really want to do this anymore?
Yeah. So you were committing to the one show a week pretty much.
Totally.
And then
totally.
And you were writing at least a joke a day.
Correct.
Okay. And then where are you still doing it today? Like paint me a picture for what's going on right now.
So now I'm at the point where it's funny because, you know, it's so crazy with habits, especially with the past year. People had to adjust their habits anyway, right? What I've adjusted my habit to is I have a nice backlog of essentially material that I now want to beef up, that I now want to add more to. So instead of just doing as much as I can, putting the quantity out, now I'm going into the mechanics and the quality. I'm trying to now take material that hasn't seen the stage, beef it up a little bit more. But I think just that daily practice of the joke writing and getting on stage has now, in the time of, you know, being inside and paying attention to the news and stuff like that, has made me funnier. It doesn't take as much of the grunt work as it used to be able to take a situation and get a good premise from it. So that's where I'm at now. Where I'm at now is,
what are you doing physically weekly though? Like, are you still doing one show a week? Are you still, and you're still writing?
So we're closed. So there's no, like, that's, I didn't realize. Yeah. The we're closed. The industry.
Did this close recently again? Like, because the California's crazy nonsense. Yeah. Like, and that was it open for a while?
So other states were open, and then, so I was trying to book shows on the road, and they started closing. A lot of the governors started closing just comedy clubs and restaurants in general. So yeah,
well, Walmart, you know, that's fine.
Yeah.
Effing POS ass hats. God, I can't stand it.
Yeah.
So, okay. You're closed now. So you can't physically do a show. It doesn't really seem like there's like a Zoom audience because you don't really have like an online platform or anything.
Hard. There is a Zoom audience, but the problem is just comedy. Stand-up comedy was one of those things that it just doesn't transfer. I've done two Zoom shows and they're bad. Even the best ones are bad.
Yeah. It's just a different thing.
Yeah.
So you're doing your best. You're still maintaining, but you were going while it was open is what you're
100%,
saying.
100%.
Okay. And so
I was doing my best just as everything closed down.
Right. And so you were still doing like at least one a week is what you said. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so now, as you know, a way to compensate is you're just focusing on your writing and material,
totally
exploring other things. Okay.
And I'm going back to the, you know, content creation aspect, just doing that before everything closed down, like getting those habits back again. When everything closed down, I was already thinking, okay, what's the next thing I could do within this? You know, it made me more adaptable. It made me more like, how can I take comedy online? You know, I record a podcast as well. It's a comedy pod. It's like strictly comedy. You know, I try to comment on current things the way I used to when I did on stage. And you don't have the crowd aspect, but it's like you adapt, you adapt. And that's where everyone's going, you know? And I think that all comes from, that all stems from that basic habit building in the beginning.
Yeah. So the story you told yourself when you stopped the new relationship thing.
Yeah.
What have you learned about that? And do you feel like you've kind of addressed it? And I mean, you're married, so like, I can't really say like, what about next time? Right. Like, but it's like,
you, I mean, life is,
do you
life,
think,
man.
Right. Like, but do you think that you're like, maybe gonna, some other things gonna come up in your life, and then you're gonna be like, oh, I got to put this on the hold? Or like, what did you learn from that experience? And what are you doing to try to prevent like falling into that funk again?
So luckily I have a, and not everyone can say this, but I have a partner that we check in all the time. And we're super supportive when it comes to when the other person's, when I say to my wife, or she says to me that this is something I want to do, and you show in your daily habits that it's something you want to do, then there's really no argument. There were times before this when my wife was at home, and you know, she has people at her job like, I could never do that. I could, and it was just something we figured out together, that we were, you know, she saw that I wanted to do it. She was right behind me. So I think we're at the point where we've built that, especially now that there's another person involved, because your family does take in they take a part in your shortcomings and your wins and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, and they can hold you back too.
100%.
And they can support you or hold you back.
Yeah. 100%. And that's exactly why I made the point, you know, before I go on, is just that I'm lucky that I have someone that goes, listen, if this is what you want to do, I'm behind you, you know? And she's very, very flexible when it comes to things like that. We're getting our work to a point where it's almost all remote. So the way, what is that?
So your relationship, you sound like you're going to use as a way to support what you want to do rather than, so then it's less likely that it's going to happen. That would happen in the future. But are there any mental cues that you can maybe like be aware of that you might have, like stories you might have told yourself before that would have led to that? Like, have you thought about any of those? Like, have you reflected on like whatever you were telling yourself at the time so that maybe you avoid that in the future? Like, is there anything specific that you've learned from that situation?
Yeah, 100%. I believe, you know, in this whole year, I've had a few times where I've been able to kind of test that comfort level, right? Where when I'm uncomfortable, it's kind of a good place.
Mm-hmm.
And when to just drop something when it's just not working. Yeah, I think I've gotten to the point of reflecting that I know I should have. I know that what I was telling myself was basically bullshit, right? Mm-hmm. And now that I'm at the point of, you know, I know when that quote unquote inner bitch is coming out. I know his voice. I've identified him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a part of me. He's in there, but I know when it's him. So when it comes up, I'm like, you know, I observe the voice. I don't feed it. I don't,
right.
I try not to react to it. Like, shut up. I don't bully it because I know it's there and I know it's another part of me. I let it happen. I observe the thought and typically you get to a place, especially in a creative endeavor, and I'm sure entrepreneurism is the same way, when you know in your gut when it's something you're supposed to be doing. So I think mentally I've just gotten myself to a place where, you know, when that comes out, to sit with it for a second,
but let it
don't
pass.
Let it, exactly. Let it pass. Don't.
That's what self-awareness can do. Totally. Yeah, that's totally good.
And that has taken work, man.
Oh, of course. It's you're not done either.
Yeah.
You're going to have to keep working forever.
Forever.
It doesn't end, right?
Forever.
So this is, okay, good. So we got that core big, you know, failure mistake. We've unpacked it. We've talked about it. I think there's some cool bits in there. Let's go through the rapid fire round. Right. These are kind of rapid fire questions. The answers could be a few sentences if you want, but the answers might also just be like one or two things, right? So you can answer them how you want. And we're going to aim to wrap these up in a few minutes and then we'll part. So the first one is, what really drives you in life?
One, my family, and that, you know, my wife, and also just my desire to want to be happy. It's mainly happiness.
Your desire to want to be happy.
Yeah.
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 Okay, great. What do you really want for your future? If you could paint like that idealized happy place of work, of purpose, of family, what does that look like?
With one word, it's freedom. To
freedom,
be able,
yep.
It's freedom. It's just being able to go where I want, being able to be with who I want.
And work on what you want to work on when you want to work on it.
Totally.
Yep. Yep. That's good. It is actually one of the most pressing drives for humans. And most people, they haven't figured that out. They keep spending money, going in debt to buy things, to impress people they don't know or like. And it just makes them a time and debt slave. And it's like, wait a second, why do that? So.
And you feel worse after too. When you feed into those desires, you feel so much worse.
Drug addiction and like a food addiction, same thing. So what are some fears? Like, how will you feel if you don't reach your goals? If you maybe don't reach that freedom or you aren't successful, how will you feel? What are some fears around that?
There's definitely a fear. I try not to let it, you know, sit in my mind too much because I need that drive to take the front seat. Mm-hmm. But the back seat, that fear is definitely, it would be crushing. there's no other, I don't think there's any other option for me.
You mean you have a fear of not being successful. It would crush you. Is that what you're saying?
It would crush me completely. I know. Studies that show people, that's when the regrets come out. That's when the regrets come out. So I don't want to be on my deathbed going, I wish I tried. I wish I at least tried.
Something everyone should read is the top five regrets of the dying. There's an article and a book written about it, but one of the top regrets is I wish I would have lived a life for myself instead of others. And obviously there's like, I wish I would have not worked so hard. Right. But I also think a lot of those people that were, a lot of the people that were polled in that specific, the writer who did it, he used to work in nursing homes. I guess he would like poll people or something like that.
Yeah.
It was a different generation. I feel like we're actually going to have more people in this generation. I mean, I think we'll say the same thing. I think we will say, I wish I wouldn't have worked so hard, but I think we're going to have more people saying that they at least were working on things that mattered to them. The internet has kind of given us that ability, but it's the same problem. We get addicted to our work even, and then we miss out other things that matter. And it's just like never ending. And so like, that's definitely the duality of kind of self-made pursuit is like, you can always do it too much and you can always do it too little. You got to find what that sweet spot is.
Yeah, totally.
So what was your greatest achievement for 2020?
Oh man, a few of them. One of them was frugality, further frugality.
You just spent less?
We spent,
expenses.
We weren't able to go anywhere. And then it became part of us where it was like, oh man, I did not enjoy go. Like, we went out because we were working too hard on things we didn't like or love. Mm-hmm. And so then we were overcompensated by going, let's go do
spend
this
money.
And do that and spend money. Totally. You get caught in that race. So I think one of my biggest takeaway from 2020, or my newest skill, right,
was like your spending habits.
But spending habits and just and internalizing that, like, happiness is just, it's made here.
Yeah.
It's made in the current moment.
Yeah. And it's a choice. You have it at any second.
100%.
So aside from the comedy thing, what was the greatest challenge of last year and how did you overcome it?
The greatest challenge of last year was not just being the funny guy.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
There was enough time to get back into things that I also love doing, like watching movies. And because at some point, you know, because comedy is just another thing under the entertainment umbrella. At some point, I want to make movies. At some point, I want to make shows. I want my own production company. I want my own media company. And it got back to, you know, before that, it was just, I want. And this year got back to, this is what this takes. You have to be the guy that knows how to do these things. You need to be a student of every single part of the craft. You don't just go, well, one day I'll be able to hire some people to do that aspect. You want to at least know, you know, the inner workings of what you're doing. And that happened for me this year, understanding and actually being able to create a roadmap to a production company going, this is what it's going to take. It's going to take being a media company and then a media company with enough pull with a production department and building that out.
So you realized you had some kind of dormant goals that you weren't like actively pursuing. And so you brought those to the forefront. You maybe created a plan and now you have like at least some kind of roadmap.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. So a goal without a path is like it's like a fairy tale. Like it's nothing, you know,
it's just floating. It's attached literally to nothing.
Yeah. It's like air in your head, right? It's literally nothing. So that's good. What is an unexpected source of joy last year?
Oh man. Wow. Walking in my neighborhood.
Oh dude. Walking's so huge. I picked up a walking habit too. It's so good for you.
Yeah.
It's so good.
We have a dog too. So I took my dog out. Me and my wife took a nightly walk at 10 PM. To the point where after like 3 or 4 days, my dog was waiting by the sliding door. Like, you guys ready or what?
Yeah. Dogs are good for routines too, for building habits like that. Like 100%. You get the dog used to that. They'll get used to that. That's really good.
Yep. And she pesters us to do it. So we don't miss it.
That's good. What is a favorite book of 2020? Yeah. Just favorite book or impactful book.
The People's History of the United States.
Interesting.
Howard Zinn. Yeah. I really liked it. I think it was good. I think it was important to just to find a balance, because I started to lean more towards, you know, history is written by the victor, right?
Yes.
And
yeah. Yep.
100%. So you want to be able to, I just wanted to at least see what the other story was, because obviously we grew up in the United States education system and it's been for the most part. It's bad.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Creating workers and, you know, to instill, I totally think people should have pride in their country when it comes to just country strength and how you deal with people in your community. That helps. But, you know, there was a dogma we were taught in school about how awesome we are as a country. And
yeah, look at our history. Hello.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Even stuff like, you know, Samuel Adams, going into like the founding fathers and who people thought the founding fathers were, and then separating who the guys actually were, who people thought the other, like people thought they were totally two different people. And I'm not talking like people confusing Thomas Jefferson. I'm people thought that like Samuel Adams was one of the founding fathers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's like 1 in 4 or 5 high school students don't even know what the Holocaust is. Like, I mean, don't even get me into like the ignorance of history, and then the history itself, there's issues. And there's also, you know, the times are different. Like in the biblical times, you're stoning people to death. It's like an average Tuesday. Like there's stuff going on. Like it's not like eye for an eye, you know. It's like, we have to understand that humans have been evolving. We've been evolving. I mean, physically a little bit, but mostly culturally, we've been evolving for 10,000 years. I mean, like this stuff takes time.
Totally.
Anyways, without going down that deep rabbit hole,
I was like, because I could jump right on that and we could.
That's
go
another
for hours.
Podcast, another day. What's one huge principle for life that you've learned in your life that's you know, something that you've internalized that's based on like something major in your life you dealt with or whatever? Not just something you read in a book or you saw a quote somewhere, but like what's a big important principle in your life that you think other people would probably find value in?
You can always do what you want.
Okay, explain that.
You always have the choice to, you know, I love my wife very much. If at any point she wanted to end our marriage, if at any point I wanted to end the marriage, if at any point we needed to go somewhere else, if at any point I had to quit a job, you always have the choice to end a relationship with someone, not even your significant other. Say that's great. You always have the choice to end a relationship with someone who's toxic. You always have the choice to be happy. You always have the choice you always have a choice to do what it is you want to do. And you can make the choice to do one or the other. And you try to be stoic about it. And I'm not using good or bad, because that means different things for different people. But things, you know, me and you are people who believe that things just are as they are. And I'm, you know, I come from a religious background, and I was even raised understanding that things are neither good or bad. They are. And it depends on how you react to them. So you always have, you just always have a choice. You can make good something good. You can make something bad.
Yeah. And I think also what you're saying is it's always your choice and thus your responsibility.
Totally.
Right. Whether it's happiness, unhappiness, how you respond to anything, literally everything in your life is a belief or a thought or an emotion, right? And most of us believe we're passive observers of our brain. And we're just like, so we just respond, right? We have no control over our subconscious. We have no control over our monkey mind. We have no control over the elephant. They say that's like driving us. We're just like a passive observer. But the reality is that's all our decision and our choice. Totally. If you don't unpack your trauma, and therefore it makes you live in victim mindset, and then you blame people, and then you like cause drama for no reason because you're insecure. Well, that might feel like it's just like is the way it is, but guess what? You're letting it happen. And you're not fixing it. You're not doing anything about it. So you're choosing that way, right?
Totally.
It's actually a lot of what I've been talking about in the Better Human School, which I'm building right now, and that's what this podcast is going to be, you know, helping promote. But it's just like it's amazing how something as simple as that big idea, like what teacher or mentor growing up, or even, I mean, parents, not to take anything away from them, but like they weren't even equipped with how to live a functional, productive, happy life. Like we're literally a bunch of monkeys running around with no operating manual for this, for the most complex machine in the universe, which is between our ears. Like it's actually fascinating when you think about it, like aliens observing us, probably it's just probably like the best reality TV show ever up for them.
Completely,
you know, like it's just like completely. What that person did that? What are like
they're watching us? They're going their brain out of schools, just eating them, and now they're like making cars and stuff. What is going on? And they still don't get it. I don't.
And they still don't understand the opposite sex. They still don't understand like. Just basic.
Oh, they believe the politics. Works. They believe the politicians.
I know. It's like
they're gonna do good things.
I know.
They've never done good things.
This term is gonna be different.
Totally.
Right. Like it's just like oh my gosh. Right. 100%. Anyways, we could go on and on and on about that, and I'm sure we will. We'll probably do a round two when you make another big mistake in your life, or if you have one that comes up that you remember, we can spend another show on that in the future. We'll be doing more of these every Monday and Friday.
All right,
Mondo, appreciate you coming on the show. We'll have links to everything in the notes.
Sweet, man.
And you know, keep writing those jokes, and when shit opens up, get out there.
Thanks for having me on, man. Stay safe.
Please always remember that the members of the Ancestral Mind podcast are not, in fact, medical professionals. They're not doctors. They're not nutritionists. They are simply providing this entertainment for you to do your own research and to entertain yourselves. So please consult a physician before changing your diet. Not everything works for everybody. And make sure you always do your own research on everything you hear on this show and outside.